there's a great day coming. A great day coming. There's a great day coming by and by when the saints and the sinners will be parted right and left. Are you ready? Let's see. Turn with me, if you would, to Matthew chapter 25. Chuck has done such a masterful job opening up the words of Matthew chapters 24 through 25. And this dialogue that Jesus has with his disciples. And he's asked me to focus primarily today on what we generally call the parable of the talents. In doing so, let's look at it in three different ways. First of all, let's look at the background to this story. And then second, we'll break down this story, watch it unfold as we read it. And then thirdly, we'll look at some lessons found from the story that can hopefully motivate us to make certain that we are ready for that day to come. Let's begin by looking at the background to what we call Jesus' parable of the talents. We go all the way back to Matthew chapter 24, the first few verses. Jesus left the temple and was going away when his disciples came to point out to him the buildings of the temple. They wanted him to see how beautiful this place was. But he answered them, "You see all these, do you not? Truly I say to you, there will not be left here one stone upon another that will not be thrown down." That struck a note of curiosity in the hearts of the disciples. And so a little bit later we find them in verse 3. It says, "He sat on the Mount of Olives." And so they have traveled east from the Temple Mount down through the Kidron Valley, up to the Mount of Olives, possibly even to this garden called the Olive Press, Gethsemane, where Jesus would love to go, meet his disciples, go and pray. So here we find him in verse 3. He sat on the Mount of Olives. The disciples came to him privately saying, and they asked him actually three questions. There's a time question, there's a sign question, and there is an end of time question, because they were misunderstanding what Jesus was saying relative to one stone not being left upon another. They thought he was talking about when he came and everything would be destroyed, and thus three questions. Tell us, when will these things be? Time question. And what will be the sign of your coming? Sign question. And of the end of the age? End of time question. All of the rest of Matthew 24 and chapter 25 is Jesus responding to those three questions. He starts with the middle of the three, the sign question. We missed last Sunday. We were away. But I remember the Sunday before, and oh, I just reveled in Chuck unraveling Matthew chapter 24 and all of these signs that Jesus pointed to. Individual signs. Look for this and look for that. Look for this. And then finally he said, when you see the abomination of desolation, know that the end is near. And Luke, of course, identifies the abomination of desolation as the army of Rome encircling the city of Jerusalem, which took place in AD 70. And thus, the sign question. But what about the time question? When was this all going to happen? Well, verse 29, immediately after the tribulation of those days, when all of these signs come into fruition and all of this actually happens that you can see unfolding before you, immediately after that, now we're getting into when this is going to happen. And in this paragraph of verses 29 to 31, he uses, we'd say today, funky terminology. The sun refusing to shine, the moon not lighting up, stars falling down, figurative, apocalyptic, we would say, language from Old Testament scripture, pointing to people in authority falling, losing their positions of authority. And so Jesus said, here are all these signs. Immediately after all of that, all of the Jewish economy is going to come to an end, and all in authority among the Jews are going to lose their positions of prestige and rule. In verses 32 to 35, he gets downright specific, and he actually says, in your lifetime, all of this is going to happen. And so actually, when Jesus began addressing their three questions, from verse 4 all the way through verse 35, he's talking about the judgment that was to come to the city of Jerusalem and the Jewish economy. But verse 36 begins with a stark contrast, but concerning that day. What day? Time question, sign question, end of time question. Concerning that day, the end of time. In fact, Jesus is very specific. He used the definite article. It's not translated, at least in my version. He said, concerning that the day, that specific day, the end of time day. And hour no one knows, not even the angels of heaven, nor the Son, but the Father only. You don't know when it's going to be. The angels don't know when it's going to be. I don't know when it's going to be. The Father's the only one that knows when the end of time is going to be. He points to how sudden it would be, and then he tells three stories. Story of the faithful servant, which encourages us, verse 44, be ready, because you don't know when. And then the story of the 10 virgins, which says in essence, watch, because you don't know when it's going to be. Three stories. The first two stories actually say, be prepared, because you don't know when this is going to happen. The third story is the parable of the talents. And it builds on those first two and says something altogether different. It doesn't say, be prepared, be ready. It doesn't say, be prepared, watch. It actually says, be productive. Let's watch it unfold and see a breakdown of the story. Verses 36 all the way through the end of chapter 25 talks about the judgment that's coming to us all, for which we must be ready. As we break down the parable of the talents, there are five scenes. Whenever I study the parables, I love to think about a play that's going on. And you know how a person will step on stage and they'll have a big piece of poster board and there'll be a word or two, and it actually sums up what that scene is all about. So it's the title for that scene. And that person walks across the stage with this one word on the poster board, and this is what this scene is all about. And then scene number two, here's another poster board with another word and so forth. There are five scenes in this story of Jesus. Let's read it and watch it unfold before us. beginning with verse 14. It will be it, that is, the end of time. That's what he's talking about here. It will be like a man going on a journey who called his doulos, his slaves, his servants, and entrusted them his property. Now, we know that his property did not involve his land and his houses, because what was entrusted to his servants was something that they could invest or something that they could even bury. And so it was probably something relative to funds, monies. Verse 15 says, to one he gave 5 talents, to another 2, to another 1 talents. Now, in Jesus' day, the word talent wasn't used the way we use it. Isn't he, she, such a talented person? No, in Jesus' day, the word talent was a measurement. We speak in terms of grams and kilograms and pounds and tons, pipes and quarts. They had talents. A talent was actually about 80 pounds. Now, let's kind of put this in perspective. We don't know what was being measured here. He gave one 5 talents. That's 5 times 80 pounds of something. He gave another 2 times 80 pounds of something. He gave another 80 pounds of something. We don't know what the something was, but let's put it in perspective and suggest that it might have been gold. I checked yesterday. The going price of gold today is $60,000 a pound. Now you can do the math. $60,000 for 1 pound times 80, that's a talent, would be over $9 million. And one of these servants was given $9 million times 5. Somewhere between $40 and $50 million. Wow. Another was given 160 pounds, let's say, worth of gold. Over $16 million. And another was given $9 million. That's enough in and of itself. We're talking about the price of gold 2,000 years ago, and you can see what this measured up to be, if indeed these were 5, 2, and 1 talents of gold. So these men were entrusted with the man's belongings. And the verse goes on to say, to each was given according to his ability. Responsibility is my response to my ability. And it's very true that you had one here that was more capable than the other two. You had another that was not quite as capable as one, but more capable than the other. You had one that, well, he was still capable, but not as capable as the other two. But all of them had abilities, and they were given responsibility to which they were expected to respond. And so, scene number one is entitled, An Assignment. Now, poster board number two starts walking across the stage, and now there is another word. Scene number two is administration. Now we're going to see how these men fared with the responsibility that they were given. He who had received the 5 talents went out at once. He went, don't miss that, at once. He didn't waste any time. He went out at once and traded with them, and he made 5 talents more. If indeed he had been given between $40 and $50 million, so to speak, in gold, he went out and resulted in his having $80 to $100 million that he could give to his master when the master returned. So also he who had 2 talents made 2 talents more. But he who had received the 1 talent went and dug in the ground and hid his master's money. I turn back to Matthew 13 about verse 44. This was a way that they would secure their funds. They didn't have lock boxes and banks like we do. So they would bury their money in the ground. That's why in Matthew 13, a man found a treasure hidden in a field. That's what they did. Now scene number 3 begins in verse 19. After a long time, the master of those servants came and settled accounts with them. Scene number 3 is accountability. Settled accounts. The words translated are very intriguing. Settled. Suniro. Iro means to raise, soon together. To raise together. The word translated accounts is the word logos, words. So he raised together words. It's the word picture is, he has written down, servant number 1, I entrusted with 5 talents. I gave him $40 to $50 million. But he raised up that word together with another word. Now he's written down what the servant has given to him in return. So I gave him $40 to $50 million in gold, and he's given me $80 to $100 million in gold in response. Wow! Same thing with the one that was given two. But the one that was given 1 talent, the gold or whatever, is buried in the ground. Which brings us to scene number 4. An assessment. The master expresses his pleasure or a want of such to what the servants have done to that with which they had been entrusted. Verse 20, he who had received the 5 talents came forward, bringing 5 talents more, saying, Master, you delivered to me 5 talents. Here I have made 5 talents more. The assessment, his master said to him, well done, good and faithful servant. Another way to translate this one word translated well done is excellent. Oh, excellent, good. Faithful servant. He used 3 words to summarize the man we call the 5 talent individual. Verse 22. He also who had the 2 talents came forward saying, Master, you delivered to me 2 talents. Here I have made 2 talents more. His master said to him, excellent, good and faithful servant. And so, both of these individuals received an extremely positive assessment for the way they had responded to their ability and that into which something had been placed into their trust. But now, scene number 5 is an assessment that is quite different, negative. Verse 24, he also who had received the 1 talent came forward saying, Master, I knew you were a hard man, skleros, you were a scarred man. We might say, you're calloused. I knew that you were a calloused individual, reaping where you did not sow, gathering where you scatter no seed. So I was phobeo. I was phobia. I was afraid. And I went and hid your talent in the ground. Here, you have what is yours. Now, if indeed he had been entrusted with 1 talent of gold, he would have been given over $4 million. And he went out and buried it, and he came back and he said, here's your $4 million. I didn't lose a penny. Didn't gain anything, but I didn't lose anything. And I didn't defraud you. I didn't misuse anything. So here's your money. All $4 to $5 million of it. But his master answered him, you wicked. I want you to pause with me. The man was not wicked because he didn't attend the synagogue regularly. He was not wicked because he refused to sit in the seat of Moses and read sequentially from the law and the prophets. He wasn't wicked because he didn't go to the synagogue and engage in prayer with the leaders of the synagogue. He wasn't wicked because he used bad words. He wasn't wicked because he looked at bad pictures. He wasn't wicked because he wasn't a good daddy or a good husband. He was wicked. But why? Look at the next word. You wicked and slothful servant. There's a third word that he uses, and I have to keep reading to find it. You wicked and slothful servant, you knew that I reap where I have not sown, gather where I scatter no seed. Then you ought to have invested my money with the bankers, and at my coming, I should have received what was my own with interest. Can you imagine investing $5 million with those that you can gain interest from, and what $5 million would bring if it only made 10%? But he didn't do that. So take the talent from him. Give it to him who has the 10. For to everyone has will more be given, and he will have an abundance. But from the one who is not, even what he has will be taken away. I said there were three words used to summarize this man. We're coming up on the third. Cast the worthless. You wicked, you slothful, you worthless servant. Cast him into the outer darkness. In that place there will be weeping and gnashing of teeth. More on that in just a moment. And so that's the story as we break it down. But what about some lessons that can be found from this story of Jesus, a story that he tells, teaching us, be productive so that you can be prepared for the end of time. Here are three lessons I would suggest. Number one, we all have unique skill sets. The five-talent man wasn't like the two-talent man, and the two-talent man wasn't like the five-talent man, and the one-talent man wasn't like the two and five-talent man. They were all individuals with unique skill sets, and they were given responsibility in response to their ability. So we all have unique skill sets. I'm reminded of what Paul wrote in Galatians chapter 1. In Galatians chapter 1 and verse 15, he talks about how that God set me apart before I was born. Did you hear that? God set me apart before I was born, called me by His grace. I was pleased to reveal His Son to, and was pleased to reveal His Son to me in order that I might preach Him among the Gentiles. God had a plan for me, Paul said, before I was even born. What is God's plan for you? What's the unique skill set God has given you? Some of us can do things the others of us cannot. And what could be said of one can be said of us all. We all have a unique set of skills. Lesson number two. We are going to talk to Jesus about how we have used our skill set. Who do you think represents the master in this story? With whom are we going to stand and make an account? Doesn't 2 Corinthians chapter 5, verse 10 say, we must all appear before the judgment seat of Christ and give an account of the things done in the body? I'm going to stand before Jesus and I'm going to talk to Jesus, give an account of the things done in the body, whether it be good or evil. I'm going to talk to Jesus about how I used my skill set or sets when I was living in my body. You are too. Lesson number 3 can be rather frightening. We will go to heaven, or we will be sent to hell based on what we have done with our skill set. I'm not talking about, have you been baptized? I'm not talking about, where do you worship? Or how do you worship? Matters that are of extreme importance, yes, and we'll talk to Jesus about those. But in this context, we're going to talk to our master about what he gave us and how we used it. The skill set that he gave to us, who he made us to be, and what we became with who he made us to be. And what he sees can determine a destiny for all eternity. Back to that story. Cast out the worthless servant. Ekbalo. Balo means to throw. It's prefaced by the preposition ek, out of. Throw out of. Get this guy away from me. Into outer darkness. In that place there's weeping and gnashing of teeth. Those are words that Jesus was used in his ministry to define or to describe the valley of Hinnom. Gehenna. The valley of Hinnom was to the south of Jerusalem, and it was the Jerusalem city dump. And all the trash would be taken there. You had vagabonds and the homeless. They would be taken there at death, and they would just be thrown into this Jerusalem city dump. Fires were kept going at all times to keep down stench and the threat of disease. Worms, maggots would literally burrow themselves into decaying bones and rotting flesh and trash. And Jesus used that place, Gehenna, Valley of Hinnom, to describe eternal hell. And these words, outer darkness, weeping and gnashing of teeth, he associated with eternal hell. Get this guy out of my sight. Send him to hell. Who God made me to be is pretty important. Based on that criterion, I ask the question again. Are you ready? I want to pause and direct all of my attention right here in these first 3 rows, okay? You're right here on the beginning of life. I could trade places. No, I don't. You have some decisions you have to make. Did you know that God made you to be somebody special? There's nobody like you in this world. Look at your fingerprints. Anybody have fingerprints like you? I can tell the answer, no. Look at the inflection of your voice. Anybody have a voice like yours? No. God made each of you special. You have a skill set, or you have skill sets. You need to find out what they are and determine how to use them for His glory. Ask the two questions. What do I really like to do? What do I really do well? Be honest with yourself. The answer to those two questions fused together will tell you who God made you to be. Well, Brother Dan, what if I have more than one set of skills? Good, guys. Good question. The third question you need to ask is, which of those skill sets can I use that will bring my God the most glory with my time in my body? And that's where you spend most of your time with life. All eyes up front, right here. Don't you let anybody plan your life for you. Don't you let anybody tell you what they think you've been made to do. Don't you live your life to make anybody happy. What do you do well? What do you do that you love to do? And what can you do that will bring God the greatest amount of glory in your life? That's what you need to do before you stand before Jesus and talk about the response you gave to your ability. And what I just said to these wonderful young men and women is something that relates to every single one of us. Are we ready? You ever thought about what it's going to sound like when Jesus comes? Paul tells us in 1 Thessalonians chapter 4, the Lord will descend from heaven with a crying command. He tells us Himself what that command will be in John 5, 28 and 29. All that are in the grave will hear His voice and come forth. There's going to be a crying command demanding all that are dead to come back to life. I don't know what He'll say. Talitha, cumin, little girl, stand up. Lazarus, duo, Lazarus, come here. Iro, raise. I don't know what He's going to say, but we will hear Jesus command all that are in the grave to be raised. We'll hear the voice of an archangel. I don't know if it's Michael or one of the others, but the Lord Himself will descend from heaven with a crying command, with the voice of an archangel. And thirdly, we will hear the trumpet of God, not a harp, not a composite of harps, not a beautiful angelic choir, not a set of drums, not even a trumpet. It will be the trumpet that belongs to God. It's as if God took His shofar, His ram horn turned into a trumpet, and hands it to somebody and says, blow. Summons the end of time, blow. Who'll blow it? To whom is He going to hand the trumpet? Will it be another archangel? Will it be an angel? Will it be the Holy Spirit? After all, the word spirit, pneuma, means breath. Who will blow the trumpet? I don't know. I'll hear Jesus command the dead to be raised. I will hear the voice of an archangel, and I will hear the trumpet of God blown by someone. There's a fourth thing I'm going to hear. It's Peter that tells me in 2 Peter chapter 3 that the Lord's coming will be like a thief in the night, in which the heavens will pass away with a roizadan, a great noise, or if you please, a roar. we will literally witness the explosion of an entire universe imploding out of existence. That's what we're going to hear. But what are we going to see? We're going to get to see an angel. More than that, when the Son of Man comes and all the angels with Him, we read in Matthew 25, verse 32, it will be the moment in which heaven is literally vacated. The only ones there will be God the Father and God the Spirit. Jesus, along with all of the angels, will come into our presence. And we'll see what an angel looks like. We will see the sky ablaze. 2 Thessalonians chapter 1 tells us Jesus will be revealed with His mighty angels in flaming fire. We've never seen anything like this. And we will witness the dead raised. My mama and papa, my father-in-law and my mother-in-law run. My mother and my father, my son, I'll get to see them raised from the dead. Won't that be something? And then we'll get to see the King of Kings and Lord of Lords make His entrance. Are you ready? Only you? No. Our elders will be along the walls. Two will come up here. If you don't like the answer to that question, accept their embrace. Let us help you this morning as we stand together and as we sing.